If there were a world record award to give for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But even though MLB had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Neighbor News Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Seipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson, who I am sad to report is not podcasting from his brand new fridge.
Look, those fridges were quite expensive. I looked at the fridges with the Wi-Fi, but I was like, God damn, why?
Has technology gone too far?
A fridge with Wi-Fi is probably not necessary.
I found, like, voice-activated dishwashers and stuff, too.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, like you could set it up with an app where you could, like, tell it. Like, you could talk to your phone and be like, start dishwashing or whatever. And I was like, what? Like, just why? Why?
If it doesn't put the actual dishes in the washer for you, then... really, pressing a button is not that hard.
What is this, the Dark Ages? There's a good Futurama reference for you. It's funny you mentioned that. I was making a porchetta yesterday, and I'm sitting there thinking, man, it'd be nice if my phone would connect to my meat thermometer so I would get a notification when it hit temperature. And then I also immediately thought, what the fuck is wrong with me? What a first world fucking idea. I want a phone app to tell me when my meat is cooked instead of, you know, a bell or something.
Last Thanksgiving, my cousins cooked a turkey with one of those, where he got a notification. He was like, oh, the turkey's done. And I was like, what? Like, how'd you know that? And he was like, it told me. Like, I got a notification for it. It's a smart thermometer. And I was like, it's wild.
You know, I've gone too far. I'm not going to lie.
All right. So, promote, extend, trade this week. And on this date in 1994, the Major League Baseball season was officially canceled because the players were on strike for about a month at that point. So the season
canceled
was cut.
Culture strikes again.
Yeah. The season was cut short by about 6 weeks. As we know, as Mets fans, a lot can happen in 6 weeks, good and bad.
Mostly bad.
Yeah, mostly bad in terms of the Mets. So, of these things that could have theoretically happened if the season hadn't stopped, what are we going to promote, extend, or trade? First up, we have Tony Gwynn breaking Ted Williams' record. Gwynn had a 394 average through mid-August, so it was very possible.
Skill set to do it, too, you know?
Yes, yeah. Of course. Next up, we had Matt Williams and Ken Griffey Jr. breaking Roger Maris's single-season home run record. Williams had 43 home runs, and Griffey had 40 through mid-August. So, again, in the realm of conceivability.
Young Griffey.
And lastly, we have the Montreal Expos going to the World Series. They were 74-40 up to that point. They were considered by a lot of baseball people to be the favorites for the National League pennant. And... obviously, they did not end up going to the World Series because there wasn't a World Series.
So what do we promote, extend, trading this based on? What we would have liked to see happen or the probability that it would have happened?
What you would have really liked to have seen happen, what you would have been okay with, and then what you don't really care.
Trading the Expos World Series because they became the Nats and screw the Nats.
Yep.
Promoting Gwynn because batting average just isn't my thing, and extending Griffey breaking the home run record because God, I just I wish I had been alive for young Griffey.
He was quite good. Definitely doesn't get the respect that he should, even though he is a universal first ballot Hall of Famer by everybody. But
my hot take is that if Ken Griffey had been healthy his entire career, we would talk about him as the best player ever.
I could see that.
Yeah, not going to question.
Yeah.
He had all
three. Where do you guys fall in the young Griffey versus Trout spectrum?
Tough.
Yeah.
That was the thing on Twitter a couple weeks ago, right?
I remember that, yeah.
I don't have any numbers in front of me, so I mean, it's just going to be from the heart or whatever, but I guess I would go with Ken Griffey Jr., but that could also just be because of the marketability of everything. Griffey was heavily marketed, whereas Trout
was also
is kind
just
of
the coolest player of all time.
Right, Trout is great, but MLB doesn't really lean into him that much.
And I mean, there's not much to lean, like, I don't even know what you would lean into outside of he's good.
Meteorology.
Like, yeah, right? Like, I don't care about that.
Ken Griffey had Ken Griffey Jr.'s baseball. Mike Trout has
Mike Trout's Trout Weather Channel.
Yes.
I mean, do what you want.
Oh no, I'm not blaming him. Like,
see, I think from like the totally objective perspective, Trout is 100% the better player because different era, et cetera, et cetera. Like, modern players are better.
That's true.
Like, compared to his peers, Trout never had a season below, you know, 60% better than league average, and Griffey has had two seasons in which he's been better than 60% above his peers.
Yeah, league average, exactly.
But yeah, I don't have enough. In terms of just baseball ability and everything, I don't have enough information on young Griffey to make a call on that.
I feel like, anecdotally, Trout's the better hitter and Griffey's the better defender.
Yeah, so, I was just going to say. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say it evens out because I don't, like, I'm not looking at it right now. I don't know if it does. But, like, Trout's not a bad center fielder, but Griffey is, like,
otherworldly.
Like, top five ever.
Well, it was until his health was problematic.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
It sucks.
That's another good thing to bring up is that there basically was, Griffey basically had two careers. Young Griffey, where he was that player. And then post-Griffey, where he was, you know, with the Reds. And who else did he play with? The White Sox?
Yeah.
Like, late Griffey reminds me of Robinson Cano. Or maybe I should say Robinson Cano reminds me of late Griffey. Because there's still, like, that silky smoothness and everything just looks cool. But the top-end athleticism isn't there.
Cano's probably healthier right now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, probably.
Like if Cano plays three more years, I wouldn't be surprised because the DH is hanging around and he could stick there. But, like, towards the end of Griffey, it was like, you know, you really trotting him out there because he was Ken Griffey. And it got bad at the ends for him, which sucks. Like, to have a career in that way is just brutal, no matter how good it's been.
Albert Pujols waves hello.
Oh, yeah. That's a good comp for me because, like, I guess he's better than Albert is now.
Oh, for sure.
Because Albert is, like, not even a good hitter at this point.
Yeah, that's a sad wasting away.
That's not cool. I think I would extend the hitting 400 because I don't think it's ever going to happen again.
Yeah, that's what I did, too. I feel it's a harder. Hitting is not as sexy as home runs, but it's just harder to do at that level.
It's just like,
yeah, home runs have happened twice since then, you know?
Someone's going to hit like 330 and we're going to be like, whoa, what a high average. You know what I mean? Like hitting like that is like a crazy high average now. Hitting 400 is nuts.
Yeah, and
hit 400, you're going to be well above average because just, it's almost impossible not to.
I mean, my counter-argument is that batting average is just so much more luck-dependent that to me it feels like a cheaper achievement. if that makes sense. Like, even if you're really, really good, in order to bat 400, you need to run an unsustainable BABIP, basically.
Right, but the good hitters do have a lot of control over that. You know, they can hit it where they ain't.
I mean, you need to run a BABIP beyond that level, right? To an absurd level in order to hit 400. Like, to me, the home runs one is just, like, I'm not saying that a guy who bats 400 is incredibly skilled, but to me, the home runs record is much more dependent on your talent as opposed to batting average, where you need the talent and then also a fair bit of luck.
Oh, you know, not gonna argue that there's a lot more luck involved with the hitting.
So I just looked up Ted Williams, like, not to, like, say that you're wrong or whatever, Lucas. I was just mm-hmm. curious. The year he hit 407, he had a 353 BABIP.
Huh.
Fucking hell, dude.
That's nuts.
Well, right, you either need to run a super high BABIP or run a high BABIP and also hit a bunch of dongs to boost your average without being dependent on balls in play.
Right, you have to have a high BABIP or literally be Ted Williams.
Right, right.
Which, like, well...
What year was when he hit 400? I'm so blind. So he hit 37 home runs that year, right? So he's getting 37... quote-unquote free hits, where he's not dependent on a fielder not being there. He walked 24% of the time and struck yeah. out 4.5.
Yeah, his numbers.
What?
Well, I mean, either he's going to hit a home run or just get a hit, so why
That's
bother?
That's a 6-to-1 walk-to-strikeout ratio. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he was good.
That's 600 plate appearances, too. That's
Jesus
wild.
Christ!
Like, just imagine, like, having to go to the ballpark that day and be like, I have to pitch to Ted Williams. I'd be like, I'm sick.
I mean, Pitching Ninja had a great line yesterday, the day before, in his top five of the day, where he's like, yeah, if I came to the ballpark and I knew I had to go up against the Grom, I would just go home. Like, it's the same thing. Like, oh, I gotta pitch to Ted Williams. Nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Not an enviable task.
Yeah, I have food poisoning.
My arm hurts.
Well. All right, over to Asia now. And the Unilions went 2-2 with a tie. So they're 17-15-1 in the second half, which is still at the top of the standings, but still a very crowded pack. And again, Fooling Kuo is hitter of the week. And this week he went 6-15 with a double, a triple, 3 homers, 8 RBI, a walk, and 4 strikeouts.
Better than last week.
Yep. Yeah. And pitcher of the week is Teddy Stankovic, and he went 6 scoreless innings, allowing 5 hits, walking 1, and striking out 7. So, as mentioned last week, the offensive environment is very high, and basically foreign pitchers are really the only guys that, with the occasional exception, are the ones that really float. In Taiwan.
Can I bring up an aside and poke some fun at you, make some fun of you a little bit here, Steve, for the listeners' amusement? So, Steve was, of course, not with us last week, and we missed him dearly, which meant I had to go find players of the week. So Steve directs me to the websites, right, and I'm scrolling through, and he's like, yeah, well, here's the Taiwanese one, but it's only in Mandarin, so if you don't want to do it, that's fine, you can skip it. I'm like, no, that's no problem. My really good friend is a native speaker. She'll help me out. So I bring my laptop over to her. We figure it out. And then after, she's like translating for me. It's great. Then afterwards, she's like, there's an English thing at the bottom of the page. And I'm like, yeah, well, I think that just like gives the history of the league in English. She's like, I don't think so. Click on it. And first, the English thing takes you to a history of the league. And then if you go back to the site, it stays in English. So, Steve, for the last, 3 months, you've been piecing together the Mandarin as, like, hieroglyphics or something when you could have just clicked the English button.
Was the button that said that makes it in English, was it in English or was it in
yes,
Mandarin?
Yes, it was in English.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, I have some egg on my face.
I found it amusing.
Big oops. Very, very big oops. But hey, I've learned some
valuable lesson. Yeah. Now the rest of the season should be easier.
Yeah.
Well, luckily the KBO website is a little bit better. Actually, it's not, but it's more there's more English to it than the CPBL website. And the Twins, the LG Twins, went 2-4, and then they had a game canceled because of rain. So that leaves them at 59-44-3, which is good for third place right now behind the Dinos and the Kiwoom Heroes. And the Dinos lost one of their better pitchers to an arm injury. So good for the Heroes and the Twins and not good for the Dinos. So right fielder Hyungjung Lee is hitter of the week. This is the first time this season that he's been hitter of the week. And he went 8-22 with 3 doubles, a homer, 3 RBI, 1 walk, and a hit by pitch. Lee is from Seoul. He went to Seoul High School, where he was the team ace. And as an aside, I find it super weird that there actually is a high school in Seoul called Seoul High School. I mean, Seoul is
huge. Is
that
a city of 50 million people?
Yeah, a little over 9 million. I mean, okay. It would basically be like a random high school here called New York City High School. Like, that's just weird.
Yes, I attend Brooklyn High School.
Yeah. But, so, Lee pitched in Seoul High School, and during their high school championship in his second year in 2007, he basically pitched the team to the finals himself. He estimates that he threw about 700 pitches over the span of 6 games over the course of a week, which is abusive.
As
even
a high schooler?
Yes, that's abusive even for Asian high school usage, who famously abuse their pitchers. Yeah, so in the final game, his arm was understandably in a lot of pain, and he was very tired, and his velocity was backing up, and he basically imploded, and he got the nickname, and it is a kind of pretty badass nickname, the Ace of Tears, because
that's actually great.
Yeah, he was crying on the mound because A, he was in pain, and B, you know, he was watching all of his efforts go for nothing because the team, you know, lost, and it got progressively more and more obvious that they were going to lose as the game went on. But he made an impression, and he was drafted by the Twins in 2008. And he spent his first season with them doing nothing because he got Tommy John surgery and rehabbing. So
I wonder why.
Shocking, yeah.
I wonder why.
Maybe 700 innings in a week wasn't a good idea. Or 700 innings, oh God, 700 pitches in a week wasn't a good idea. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, so he got Tommy John, and for whatever reason, the surgery wasn't successful, but he kept that part to himself because he wanted to play. He didn't want to miss another year. So he pitched through the pain, and obviously he wasn't particularly good. And after his second game, his actual second game in uniform, he retired because pain. And he picked up golf, and he actually got pretty good at golf, and he played in a semi-pro tournament, and he made it to the second round or the second day or whatever of the tournament. But after it was over, he was thinking about baseball again, and he retired from golf and went back to baseball. So the Twins reactivated him in 2013. He had another Tommy John surgery, lots of rehab, and he finally got, you know, back to the main roster. And guess what? His shoulder started causing him problems.
Yes.
Poor guy. Again, not the smartest thing, but understandable. He didn't want to tell anybody that his shoulder was hurting him because he already had 2 Tommy John surgeries, and he just wanted to play baseball. And basically, you know, towards the end of the season, it became unbearable. When the season finally ended, instead of retiring, he suggested that instead of pitching, maybe he come back as a hitter. Twins weren't really interested at first, but eventually they went along with it. And he's been a pretty solid hitter ever since. He's been a position player, a left fielder and right fielder for 5 seasons now. And he has a 293, 367, 443 batting average. And he's averaged about 10 homers per season. So he's
not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll play.
Yeah.
That's a pretty, like, interesting career path, too. Like,
yeah.
To really push through all that and still find a way to play baseball.
I'm not going to lie. The most interesting thought I had listening to this was, I want Yoenis Cespedes to become a semi-pro golfer. Yeah, I'm done. I'm too hurt to play baseball. I'm going to go play golf instead. As someone who has never watched any golf in my life outside of Tiger Woods clips, I'd pay to watch Yoenis Cespedes play golf.
And we know from Jeff McNeil that there's obviously a kind of baseball golf kind of meeting point somewhere. So Cespedes probably would be a pretty good golfer. He would definitely be the most cool golfer.
Oh, absolutely.
And much less interesting than Lee is the pitcher of the week, Casey Kelly, again.
And, gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, he allowed one run over six innings, allowing five hits, walking two, and striking out seven. And basically, the Twins don't really have good pitching. I mean, it's Casey Kelly, Logan Darnell, and maybe if you're lucky, someone else kind of comes up big that week. But
crickets.
Yep. Speaking of not having good pitching, let's move on to the Yakult Swallows.
Oh, boy.
And they went 1-4 with a tie, so another bad week. And that leaves them at 26-39-6 for the year. And Tetsuya Yamada is hitter of the week again. He went 8-24 with two homers, five RBI, and a pair of walks. And back when the Swallows started playing, and we were talking a little bit about Yamada and who he is and all that, you know, he had back-to-back 30-30 seasons in 2018 and 2019, and having a third one in 2020 would have been a record, but obviously because of coronavirus, that's probably not going to happen. Normally, the season is 144 games in Japan. This year, it's 120, so he's going to lose 20 games right there. And he was also hurt for a few weeks in July and August, so he lost a bunch of games there. So as it stands right now, he has 8 homers and 8 stolen bases in 53 games. And there are 45 games left in the season. So a 2020 year is possible if he keeps up the pace. Maybe he does a little better. But he would basically have to become like Cespedes in 2015 to get to 30 homers, which the infinitesimally small chance of happening. So that sucks.
What's his batting line on the year now?
I'd have to look that up.
I've put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you put me on the spot.
Yep, yeah.
Tetsuo Yamada. Oh, shit. I didn't spell that right. Now I'm just going to have to search Yamada. Here he is, though. Yep. He is currently hitting 266, 355, 462, which is
down year by
down,
standards.
Yeah, down by basically his career line is 292, 391, 502. So, I mean, the injury obviously is not helping things, and having a shortened season is not good either.
Right.
But it sucks because, I mean, a record like that is kind of like a Cal Ripken Jr. type thing where you need to have a very long history of being good in order to even start sniffing something like that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And it's not even his fault. Like.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to lose out on it because of a virus, not because, like, he was bad or he got hurt or, I mean, getting hurt's not your fault either, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, just all the stars have to align to, all the stars have to align to have a 30-30 season to begin with. And then to have a second one is, like, crazy, and then the possibility of a third one is like almost unheard of, and you know, probably not happening now.
Going 30-30 in 140 games also seems nuts to me, like as a starting point. But
yeah, I mean, the MLB where you have 160, you know, you have basically extra 20 games, and 30-30 seasons are very far and few in between. So yeah, he's a good player. That's why he's the Mike Trout, quote unquote, of Japan.
Also puts it even more into context how fucking insane Mike Trout is, because Mike Trout has never had a down year.
No.
Ever.
Mike Trout slumps for like 2 weeks, and the slumps look like everyone else's normal.
I'm on my way to my WRC is only 150 this week. God, I'm awful.
It's crazy. He'll have like a 110 weighted runs created plus for like 3 days, and everyone's like, and then he shows himself because he's Mike Trout.
That's like DeGrom. When DeGrom does not strike out double digit batters, it's like, oh, come on, man.
Remember that like 3-start stretch last April or something where he was mediocre, and we're like, oh shit, is he hurt? Is he actually bad? And then he's like, just shoves for the next 4 months. Like, oh, okay, never mind.
He always has a weird one against the Marlins. Because the Marlins
always do weird shit against the Mets. It's just like a fact of life.
The Marlins live to be annoying no matter who's on the roster.
Yeah, unfortunately. Got any Marlins. Well, speaking of good pitchers and aces, again, pitcher of the week is Yasuhiro Ogawa, the only good pitcher that they have. He
truly Metsian.
Yeah, he allowed one run on over eight innings. He scattered 4 hits, he walked 2, and he struck out 4. And it's still wild to me that a guy like him, who is very solid, I wouldn't say he's a great pitcher in Japan, but he's a very above-average solid pitcher, just doesn't strike out that many guys. Not even, like, a low level that you'd expect, like, not like 7/9 or whatever, like something you would consider on the low side of really good pitchers. Like, he just strikes out hardly anybody. Mm. But it works.
Amazing.
Keuchel. It's been so long since I thought about Dallas Keuchel. I forgot how to say his name.
At least you didn't say Keuchel.
Oh. Oh, boy.
All right. So, not much relevant roster news this week with the Mets. The biggest thing, I guess, is Franklin Killame. He was put on the DL this week. He had a broken fingernail. Not fully major league ready. I think we all knew this before the season started. He's close, though, and given the circumstances of the season, you might as well just throw him into the fire, let him pitch in the majors, get some innings, see what happens. Yeah. Numbers as a whole aren't really that great, especially after his last outing back on September 1st. He gave up 4 runs over 3 innings. But when you watch him, you know, you could see the glimpses of that fastball and that curveball being really effective major league pitches. And just the way the Mets have used him is kind of weird. 4 innings in relief on August 1st, then 3 innings in relief on August 17th, and then another 3 innings of relief on September 1st. So he's been in Coney Island during those gaps, obviously. I'm sure he's being kept busy, but it's just a really weird usage or non-usage, really. And coming back from Tommy John surgery, you don't want to necessarily overload a guy. But, I mean, Killame's thrown 100-plus pitches in 2016, 2017, 18. So it's not like even giving him 50 pitches would be that much of an issue, assuming there's no underlying issues that haven't been reported that we don't know about.
Right.
So, I don't know, as we've been saying weeks and weeks and weeks now, you're not going to, you know, especially with Gesellman basically done for the season, you're not going to lose out on anything by having these young kids play instead of an Ariel Jurado or a Corey Oswalt or whomever else.
I would say Mo Ramirez, but he's been pretty good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot that.
I like Erasmo Ramirez for some reason.
Me too.
He was with the Mariners for a couple of years, right?
The Rays and Mariners like traded him back and forth seemingly every other week for a couple of years, which is weird. It only was 2 trades, I think, but
it always felt like 8.
Yeah. Very simultaneously a very. He's a very Mariner starter in that he's not a great starter, but a very Rays reliever in that he's pretty good out of the bullpen and goes multiple innings, right? So he kind of fits both teams very well. But yeah, I think that, like, assuming the fingernail heals in time, like, I think you just put Killame and Peterson in the rotation for the rest of the season. And then Lugo, DeGrom, and I guess that 5th spot do whatever with. I want to see Sapucki, but they won't do that. It'll probably be Ariel Jurado and whoever else, Erasmo Ramirez.
I mean, I think it just shows, like, there's just no plan. I don't know.
Matt's not having a plan.
Yeah, so, who would have thought?
Especially now when they're, like, literally selling the team as we speak.
I'm getting very serious senioritis vibes from the Bullpen ownership group.
For sure. Which, yes. Like, I mean, same.
How discernible is that from their usual incompetence, though?
That's true. Permanent senioritis.
Permanent senioritis. 20 permanent years. Permanent ineptitude.
Goddamn Mets.
At least Peterson's been pretty good, and they only did the one weird thing with him with starting, I think it was Gesellman over him for a game. Yeah, but outside of that, like, they've just used him as a starter. And he got lit up once, but he's a fourth, fifth starter. That's
look, like, if they add if they that I've had a stroke again, as I want to do every week, you know? If they, like, add reasonable depth and then want to put pencil in David Peterson as the fifth starter, I think that's fine for next year.
Right? Yeah, I mean,
if he's penciled in as the third starter, we have some problems.
To be honest, I think Lugo is penciled in as a third starter.
I'd be fine with that, too.
Like, I think he's pitched so well as a starter at this point. Like, last night wasn't great, but, like, it wasn't bad either. Like, he kept the Mets in the game, even though he struggled. Like, he didn't have it, but...
He's cromulent.
Yeah, and I think at this point, like, he's going to be stretched out. Like, and then if you're the GM next year, you could kind of use him as a swing guy. I said that in Slack yesterday, but, like, if you happen to fall into three starters, then you could use him as a reliever, and if you don't, then you could use him as a starter if you happen to fall into three relievers. Like, you don't have to rubber stamp him at one or the other in November, you know?
Look, if the rotation next year is DeGrom, Thor, Lugo, Stroman, and Peterson, I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, that'll be a solid rotation. I don't think it's like the five aces, but
no.
It'll be like you will not be losing games because your rotation sucks.
Right. No. You don't need five aces, and a guy like Peterson is not going to be an ace. You know, that's
that kind of
profile. Left-hander, you know, low 90s with a really solid secondary pitch, and that's really it. Those kind of guys get lit up every once in a while. Case in point, Anthony Kay.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. And Kay's been pretty good this year in, like, a long reliever-ish role, right? He hasn't really been starting.
Yeah, he's been fine.
But, like, sometimes you get lit up, and, like, I think we got a little spoiled with the 2015 team when, like, it was the rotation was so ridiculously deep, but that just doesn't happen. Like, that's rare.
Mm-hmm. Look, I think the real starters are going to need to fill out that upper minors depth because the prospect pipeline really hasn't produced anything there. So I don't know how you solve that problem exactly, but I mean, the best solution for that problem is to see if Killamay can do it. And that's just the argument for sticking him in the rotation for the next two, assuming, again, the fingernail. I think he's eligible to be back, what, Wednesday or something?
Yeah, they backdated it to the first or second or whatever. So.
Oh,
yeah, he's soon, like, within the next few days, if not now.
I'd get him as many innings as possible. I would do the same with Harrell, though, with less imperative. Like, see if these guys are viable for this role for next season. But there's, of course, the caveat. Not that I think the Mets would do this if they weren't selling, because they don't do smart things like this, but right now there's zero chance they do this.
No.
Yeah. Which is funny, because the Wolfpons are still going to own part of, like, it's like 5%, so it's nothing. But you would think that they would still care.
Jeffy gets the toy every other Saturday, you know?
It's like, it's so
gets
weird.
To fill out that Sunday lineup.
Yeah, oh, great.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It's just weird. But that's kind of what the Mets do. They do weird things.
If there were a world record for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But here's the thing. Even if your MLB team got to take a break, your business didn't. And hiring has to keep moving, even when the game stops. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because it connects you to the best candidates fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you payment flexibility and full control over your hiring, so you only pay for what you need. Plus, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Indeed also gives you powerful tools to make your search easier, like sponsored job posts, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. 73% of online job seekers visit Indeed each month. Maybe that's why over 3 million companies have trusted Indeed to help bring on the important hires that keep your business moving. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
SB Nation presents the SB Nation NFL Show. 5 weekday episodes to get you through the grind of the NFL season with your favorite SB Nation community leaders. You'll get reactions to what happened on Sunday, film breakdowns, fearless takes, local expert analysis, fantasy football advice, and so much more. There's a little something for everyone on the SB Nation NFL Show. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to be sure you don't miss a single episode.
All right. So basically, after Jose Reyes left, the Mets kind of had a revolving cast of characters that weren't really inspiring at shortstop. Ruben Tejada, Omar Quintanilla, Wilmer Flores. Is Drubal Cabrera, he was kind of like the first solid shortstop that they had in a while.
Don't you disparage Wilmer Flores in this. Wilmer Flores said in this household.
But we knew Cabrera wasn't going to be the guy of the future because he was on the older side.
Yeah.
And Ahmed Rosario was going to be that guy. And he made his debut in late 2017. And his careers have been very up and down. In 2018, he hit 256, 295, 381 over the course of basically a full season. And then last year, he hit 287, 323, 432, much improved. Mm-hmm. Not hitting great this year. It's not optimal, but at the same time, he's 24. So, you know, normally it would kind of be a, it is what it is, growing pains kind of thing. But this year is not a normal year for a million reasons. And one of those many reasons is because one of the Mets' top prospects was called up, and he also just happens to be a shortstop. And he also just happens to be hitting 287, 340, 426 to Rosario's 230, 250, 345. So where do we go from here? What happens now? Because you don't want to give up Ahmed Rosario. He is still young. There's still a lot of potential. You don't want to bench you don't want to bench Andrés Giménez because there's a lot of potential. You can't the Mets are kind of boxed in. You can't put one at second base and the other at short because Robinson Cano is here and he's going to be the guy, assuming that, you know, the DH doesn't disappear. Even if the DH does stay, there's other guys that the Mets are using in that role. And Cano is an okay second baseman, so it's not like you need to have him moved. You can't put either of the two at third base because there are, again, a million guys that play third base and are probably more important to get at bats. So I don't know. Where do we go from here?
I think Ken and I have differing. We have like a point counterpoint on this, right? You want to go first with what you want to do with Ahmed, Ken? Or not, I can go first. I mean,
Ken, the speaker is so off if you don't realize.
I've always been the low guy on Ahmed. I'm not trying to victory lap that, but I think that probably plays into why I would be looking to trade him this offseason for, I don't want to say like the first pitcher with the pulse I can get, but I wouldn't need a lot to trade him, I don't think. I don't think Ahmed is particularly good. I think he has a lot of athleticism that has never really manifested itself in terms of baseball skills, right? Like, He's not a good defender. He doesn't have great bat to ball. He does, the power has never come. The plate discipline is still, how would you say, bad. Right, so there's just no skills there that seem particularly interesting to me. And if you get someone to, like, Andrés Giménez already does two things better than Ahmed does anything. Like, Andrés already is faster, better base runner, and a better defender than Ahmed is at literally any facet of the game.
I have a quote from a baseball evaluator guy. I just want to read for a second. Potential about Ahmed Rosario. So this person said, potential plus offensive shortstop with above average defense and solid speed. That sounds like a light version of Francisco Lindor to me. Obviously, it's the best case, and Rosario will never be the defensive wizard that Lindor is, but the upside here is tantalizing. By the end of 2017, the Mets could have their first above average shortstop since the days of Jose Reyes.
But, like, I don't think that was necessarily incorrect. Like, it was obviously very high. But I just think he just hit his worst-case scenario as of right now.
The baseball person that said this quote is a gentleman by the name of Lucas Vlahos, 2017.
Yep. Oh, look. I'm not going to lie. Like, I think that was also me definitely couching my negativity regarding Ahmed. This isn't a prospect profile. I think even that year I was lower. Who would I have ranked above him that year? My brain isn't functioning.
Let's see if I have it broken down.
My point being, though, like, this is a prospect profile that just never does it for me, right? The super raw, toolsy guy who, if you squint and imagine he learns how to do three different things, he'll be awesome because he's a great athlete and he's tall and lanky, right? And sometimes that does work. Sometimes you do get Ronald Acuna or insert appropriate player that got these comps and made it work here. Right, but most of the time it doesn't. And you get a player like Ahmed who has long levers and a great body in terms of that should work for baseball, but just no real good baseball skills.
The thing is, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Ahmed goes somewhere else and then also just puts it together because it's not like he didn't hit in the minors. He hit, like, at every level, and he's hit in the majors at points. Like, he was an above-average hitter in the second half last year. I think he was 2 years ago, too. Like, he had a good second half. Like, it's taken him a bit to get into the season, and then he kind of heats up from there. But the problem is we didn't have a second half of the season, and also he had Giménez breathing down his neck. And Giménez is just – he has the floor of defense where if Giménez never hits again or is, like, an average hitter, like a – 100 weighted runs created plus hitter, then he's going to have really good defense and be an above average player.
I also just fundamentally disagree with the take that Ahmed has hit, right? Even in the minors, he never did anything that screams to me sustainability. He walked more, probably because guys just can't throw strikes, and ran high BABIPs because in the minors you beat the ball into the ground and either weird stuff happens because it's a shitty minor league infield, or people don't make the play because they can't play major league defense, right? So no power, not a great batted ball profile, not a great eye at the plate. Like, I don't really think he hit all that well in the minors, or just at least didn't display skills that translate. And then last year was just mostly another just BABIP field two months, right? The other skills that you want to see to make someone a good hitter just aren't there.
I mean, that's looking at his minor league numbers. Yeah, I he didn't really hit much until 2016 when he got to St. Louis.
Yeah, the Florida State League and Eastern.
And that was when, like, he got put on the map, right? Like, that's when I remember.
Yeah,
that was basically when he showed up in, like, actual, like, athletic shape for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't he Barwist at one point?
Like, jumped, like, two grades. The same thing that happened to Giménez, actually.
Yeah.
It's like he jumped two grades of speed, like, overnight. and shot up everyone's list.
Not that Rosario
didn't really happen that way with Jimenez, but
right. Not that Rosario was necessarily a nobody or was terrible. He basically
was like a back end top 100 guy.
Yeah, he just kind of basically treaded water in relation to his stats and league age, and then he kind of really became good in St. Lucie that year, 2016, at the age of 20.
Yeah. I think just Jimenez is a little – I don't think Jimenez has the ceiling of, like, an elite major league hitter, but I think he'll be a solid – like an okay one and an elite defender, and that's a floor that just makes him safer. Like he wouldn't stop you from getting Francisco Lindor, but if the Mets go out and spend on Springer and Realmuto and or – I don't know what they're going to do, obviously, but then you could stick him at short and be fine. You know, like even if he's like a 90 weighted guy, then
hell, I think you stick him at short with the current lineup and it's fine because
exactly, like... exactly. Mets have the best weighted runs created plus in the league the last time I checked, and that was like 3 days ago. And it's not like he's like, and like he has a high batting average, but he's not hitting for any power because he's not going to. So mm-hmm. It's going to keep his weighted down, and that's fine. Like you don't need that, but I don't know. On one hand, I wouldn't mind them dealing Ahmed for a pitcher because they need the pitchers and you have Mauricio in the pipeline anyway. So, mm-hmm. like, it's not like shortstop is one of the things that they actually kind of have bodies for. And I don't even know if Mauricio is going to stick there, but maybe Ahmed could be some type of super utility guy. But is the defense good enough at the spots to do that? You know, like, I don't know what you do with him. I think it's, you know, and also I don't think you get much for him right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at with it is if somebody's willing to give you something for him commensurate with, you know, what you thought his potential was, sure. Like, yeah. You do that 9 times out of 10, but he's still, like, has a lot of team control. You know, he's still very athletic. I don't see much, you know, value in dumping him for not much,
like,
you know.
Like middle reliever. Like,
yeah,
I
exactly.
mean, yeah, I'm not
like,
I'm
if
not
you can
saying.
Get a starting pitcher, go for it.
The name that popped into my, like, I was trying to think where you would trade him because, yeah, I don't want to trade him for a reliever. That would be dumb. Unless it's, like, an elite reliever. Like, I wouldn't mind trading Ahmed for an actual, like, Edwin Diaz equivalent, right? I wouldn't mind doing that. But, like, you probably want to find a team that's rebuilding and doesn't really have a big-name shortstop prospect or current guy there. I thought the Tigers might make sense, honestly. And they do have a handful of pitchers that would be interesting. Either, like, you're obviously not going to get Mize or Scooball, right?
Casey Mize for Rosario.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to happen. Yeah. Totally going to happen, right? But, there's some other prospect guys that might be interesting, or maybe they finally move on from Matthew Boyd, who's having a really down year, but maybe you could try to buy low on that. I mean, I like Matthew Boyd because I'm a sucker for strikeouts, but like a dude's he's cost controlled until 2023. He'll run an ERA in the low fours, strikeout dudes. He'll occasionally look really, really good because like the variance on his outings is high, so I think that's good in terms of the playoffs because maybe you come out on a day when his slider is just stupid and he strikes out 12 in game 7 or something like that, right? So I wonder, an arm like that would be interesting to me for Ahmed if something like that would be on the table.
Yeah. It's tough because he's one of those dudes that I think because of the season, and yeah, it's a weird season that you can't really, like, I think we could analyze it, but you kind of put an asterisk on it. Like, remember this was 60 games, but also mm-hmm. like he's hitting like 230 and walked and didn't walk for like 2 months. Like, like that's issue.
The other thing with Ahmed is like, you know, when a player like this doesn't go well, it's because something isn't specifically going to work at the big league level. And Ahmed's, I just don't think he's ever going to learn how to hit spin.
No,
he's always had funky issues with that.
And it sucks because he really was like a legit prospect, and I wouldn't be surprised if a team really puts in a lot of time to fix him and it and pulls it off, but because I think there's a little something there. Like, I'm higher on him than Lucas is basically what I'm saying, as like a long-term thing. He's only 24, yada, yada, yada. But I don't know what you trade for him that's worth it other than just sticking him on your bench and using him
as depth.
Yeah, because we always complain every year all the time about how the Mets are like playing some rando shortstop one day. But like, if Jimenez gets hurt, I would much rather Rosario play than 30 guy.
I think a competent general manager gets more value by trading Ahmed than you get from him as a bench piece.
It depends on his market, I think.
I think a good general manager can make that, can sell him for more than his value as a bench piece who doesn't hit, doesn't play particularly good defense. Like, Ahmed's value is as a developmental part of your team, which means he needs to be playing so that he can develop, right? I don't think there's any value to him on the bench, right? Yeah. I think the guys you put on the bench are guys who can do a couple things well, but not good enough to be a starter, right? Putting a developmental guy on the bench so that they're A, not playing, and B, when they get to play, they're doing all those things badly because they're a developmental piece, like that's useless in my eyes. I'd rather play Guillorme at short than Ahmed if there's an injury, right? Because at least Guillorme plays defense.
Sure, that's right. I mean, he's hit too. Who knows how real that
is. Yeah, right. I don't think any of us buy that.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. But I'm saying, like, right now, like, if Jimenez goes down, knock on wood, and if he gets hurt in, like, 10 minutes, then, like, Guillorme's probably the play over Rosario right now. But
what about thinking outside the box kind of logic? The Mets next season, I don't think that they actually have, like, a center fielder. I don't know if Mrazek is still.
No, he's a free agent.
Right, so, I mean, a lot of you all you hear of the offseason last year, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing it again, is convert Ahmed Rosario to center field. He's athletic. He's got a strong arm to make up for, you know, not necessarily knowing routes and not having maybe the most range, if, you know, not knowing how he'll play there defensively. Do you trade a guy like J.D. Davis, whose value is going to be probably higher than it's ever been, who's getting all those third base innings, and shift Rosario there and kind of get value out of that? Like, do you consider any of those kind of outside of the box things to kind of preserve the value that you have right now with Rosario and not just basically selling at the lowest point that he's ever going to be, most likely? Because it's probably not going to get much worse than he is right now.
Yeah, it would be hard to.
I'll let someone else go first. I've ranted a lot.
So I think the center field idea would work relatively well. Jared and Jeff have been talking about it for years on For All You Kids. The things that Rosario specifically is bad at in the field, like, you know, hands, you know, getting into position on grounders, like, they all kind of don't matter in the outfield when you're catching balls in the air.
Yeah.
I don't know. He might be terrible at it, but the skills are as, you know, geared to center field as they would have or were to shortstop. I think a lot of organizations would have done this years ago.
It's also not like a crazy thing to, like,
yeah, it happens.
Sounds nuts. Like, it just sounds like what? But I mean, Juan Lagares was the best center fielder the Mets have had in a long time, and he was a shortstop.
Mm-hmm. Lots of guys have made that jump either, you know, yeah, temporarily or permanently, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a different thing, but Jeff McNeil left fielder now, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, he was a better left fielder this year than he was an infielder this year, McNeil. So it's not, like, crazy to suggest that a dude could go to the outfield and flourish. It's just, would he be able to hit as a center fielder? It's at that point, then he is a super utility guy, right? Like, you're using him in that role. Like, would the Mets roll into 2021 with Ahmed Rosario the starting center fielder?
They definitely would, but that's neither here nor there, because,
like, Mets. I don't know, like, unless you're spending a ton of money elsewhere and you're just kind of like well, we didn't get Springer, but we got Realmuto, and we spent on pitching, then sure, I don't mind trying that.
I mean, I might be undervaluing the defensive aspect here, but I like the lineup as currently constructed, and I know the current center field option, like Nimmo, is not great out there.
I think he's unplayably bad in center field, Nimmo.
I don't think he's that bad. I think he's bad. I'm saying I don't think he's...
Like, watching him this year, like, this is just me watching, like, I know it's just scouting the games or whatever, but, like, it's bad. It's worse than it was before, I think. I think his neck injury either made him tentative or something. I don't know what it is, but he is not as good as he was in center field last year, and he was not a good center fielder before. He gets to everything late. I don't know what it is.
I mean, look, I'm not saying that his defense isn't a problem. Yeah. I just think Nimmo's such a good hitter. Like, they have one too many hitters right now, and they don't have a center fielder, really.
Yeah.
And, but Ahmed's bat is, I just have so little faith in his bat being worth the trade-off, basically. Is what I'm saying. Even if the defense is better, which I'm not convinced it will be either.
Oh, I don't know. It's a total wild card what the defense would be.
I want to try McNeil in center. How bad could it be? Put the flying squirrel out in center.
That'd be hysterical.
It'd be great.
That's a good nickname for a center fielder.
So I mean, I wanted them to put him at shortstop.
That's what I wanted them to see. Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, put him at shortstop. He won't have range, but he'll make every play.
Yeah. That'd be a rough middle infield with him and Cano, probably.
Yeah. Negative 10 range.
Oh, not good. Not good.
But yeah. Ahmed's a weird one, and I don't know what you do with him that's outside of selling low and getting something that, like, a controllable reliever or something. But then it's like, I don't know, is that worth it too? It's tough.
I think that the issue, what makes it so difficult, is that so much of his value to us is theoretical value. It's like we keep telling ourselves, no, Ahmed has to be better than this. He's going to be better than this. And then we kind of get greedy. I don't know what the right word is. That, you know, we don't want to see him on another team figure it all out. And then we're just like, oh, God damn it. We got, you know, peanuts for him.
Yeah.
This is what the Mets do to you.
When the Indians trade Francisco Lindor, we call him up and say, hey, you want Ahmed Rosario?
I mean, he's just in the Lindor package to the Mets.
Maybe you give us that Karinchak guy in your bullpen. We'll send you Ahmed Rosario. Cool. Thanks.
It's a shortstop and a reliever. Like, duh.
Yeah, it just makes sense, you know? What I would do to have James Karinchak on this team.
That would be really fun.
I love Karinchak.
He would fit well in the late-inning bullpen because they're not that good, so.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it is a tough... It's an issue I'm happy that I don't have to be the one to figure out.
Yeah.
And getting into, you know, the Mets selling and what's going to be happening in the future. Who knows if Brody is going to be the one that's figuring out. Who the hell knows what's going to be anything.
Yeah. That's tough too, yeah. It depends on when he takes over, I assume, Cullen.
And I guess in a sense of this question and figuring out what's going on, the minor league, there not being a minor league season has made it more complicated because Jimenez would have definitely been in Syracuse this season for at least some portion of it. So we wouldn't be necessarily having this conversation. But at the same time, then Mauricio would still be playing and developing, and assuming that he would be continuing to get better, we might be having this conversation next year with Ahmed Rosario having had whatever kind of season he would have in a normal year, Jimenez having whatever kind of season he would have had in Syracuse, and then Mauricio waiting in the wings in, let's say, you know, Binghamton. Well, if Binghamton existed, I don't know about that also. Who
Insert
knows?
Double-A affiliate here.
Right. So, I mean, and imagine if this question is even more complicated by inserting him into all of that. I mean, there's no – I don't know.
I wonder if they would have demoted Rosario to AAA if there was a season at this point. Because Jimenez is playing every day. I mean, he's not playing against every – I don't think he's been playing against lefties, but – like every lefty, but he's been in there sometimes. I wonder at what point would you have just been like, go play in AAA and figure it out? Wow.
I mean, I haven't really been watching much, so I couldn't say, is Rosario just – doing so bad because it's like some kind of mechanical thing that's
it's not
like
mechanical,
right? I mean, it might not be something that you can work out, which is more problematic.
That's true. Yeah,
it just looks like he's going up there and flailing at every, like, just guessing.
Right. It looks like he has no confidence. He's just whatever comes remotely towards him, he's just swinging.
Basically.
Not good. And if he was some other Joe Blow, then you could just easily cut ties and who cares. If he was a Ruben Tejada or an Omar Quintanilla, then you just say whatever. But all of that value, it's just potential value and prospect rating, and we just want to hold on for dear life and hope that, you know, it manifests itself. But yeah, I don't know anymore. All right. Well, any last words for the week?
Man, in case you were wondering if the Wilpons Overwatch League team would be less disappointing than the Mets, it's just as disappointing as the Mets.
Oh, well, that's good. Glad to see this consistent.
So much potential, so many good players, totally squandered by inept coaching in the organization. Just great.
And I'm sure Jeff is the one sending the orders.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's definitely what's happening. 100%. Jeff is actually GM in Overwatch. His SR is even higher than mine. I would be very annoyed if that was actually true.
It's within
there's no way
realm
that's
of possibility.
There's no way. There's no chance.
All right, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Seipla. Lucas is at elvlahus343. Ken is at kenlaffin91. And Thomas is at sedmessseason.sdn. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.